I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Are coming back to Atlanta right now. Whoa. Mark your calendars, because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elia Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Last summer, I was on vacation in New England when I got a phone call from a number I didn't recognize. I figured it was spam. I checked the message a little while later, expecting to hear something about my car warranty.
Laura, this is Dave DeLassett returning your call over your letter about Sarah.
It was Sarah's dad. I called him back and we spoke for about half an hour. He didn't want to be recorded, but he was okay to talk. I was finally on the phone with someone who could tell me about Sarah's past, because he had been a part of it. He told me he was 72 years old and a Vietnam vet. He and Sarah's mom were married in May of 1983. They divorced less than 2 years later, when Sarah was just a few months old. It seemed like a messy breakup. The more we talked, the more I got the feeling that I'd opened up a wound that had been festering for decades. He told me something I'd heard before, that he wasn't around much in Sarah's childhood. He worked as a long-haul trucker, so he was gone a lot, but he said he didn't feel much like anyone wanted him around either. As our conversation went on, he toggled between anger and tears. I asked him to describe good memories of Sarah as a young girl, like birthday parties or trips to the zoo. He didn't offer any. I asked if he'd gotten together with his daughter much as an adult. No again. He did help her buy a car, the one Christine told me about. Sarah got it when she was dating her son, Zach. Sarah had even shown her father the engagement ring. Later, he texted me a few pictures. In one, Sarah is 5 years old, a red and white bow clipped to her short hair. In another, she looks like she's in her late teens or early 20s. She's leaning in toward her dad. They're both smiling. Sarah's dad called me one other time, a few months later. I had texted him an easy question. How do you say delashment? He called to pronounce it for me. This time, I sensed more of a smoldering pain than anything else. His voice cracked as he told me that Sarah was his daughter and he loved her and he thought she needed psychiatric care. He knew she'd gone on television. He told me he'd like to sit down for a private talk with Dr. Phil. Just before we hung up, he said he wanted to ask me something. A buddy of his had mentioned seeing a magazine article on Sarah. She's just a girl from the Midwest, he said. Why does anyone care about what she did? Why is her story worth national attention? it was a fair question to ask. What is it about Sarah's story that speaks to anyone other than the people who once trusted her? Why does it matter? I told him for the sake of her family, her victims, and even Sarah herself, it was a question I would try to answer. I'm Laura Beal. You're listening to Sympathy Pains. This is the sixth and final episode, Justice. January 21st, 2020 was a chilly, windy Tuesday in Highland, Illinois. It was early in the morning, and Officer David Brines of the Highland Police Department was keeping warm in his squad car. He was parked around the corner from where Sarah lived with her mom. By then, she was 35 years old.
It was a single-story house, I believe. It was a 2 or 3 bedroom with a basement, an unfinished basement. I went down there with, it was at least 10 FBI agents.
He was waiting for the signal from the FBI agents to go in.
We had been preparing for this for about a week, had been driving by her residence. We knew that she worked at an Amazon distribution plant nearby, and we believe she also had a separate job here at our Walmart. So we were trying to establish when she would be home.
Her mother was home too. I've heard all kinds of descriptions of Sarah's relationship with her mom, from loving to codependent, icy, and I can't say which of them is true. Maybe each of them contains elements that are. Sarah's aunt told me in a text that their mother had been killed in a car crash when they were teenagers, and they were pretty much on their own after that. She said Sarah's mom wasn't the kind to ask for help. Once when her car was broadsided, she searched through an auto salvage yard, found a door that would fit, and replaced it herself. She thought her sister had a baby for companionship, as a kind of escape from her joyless marriage. On the Dr. Phil show, Sarah's mother had been in the audience. When the cameras turned to her, she said she wasn't aware of what Sarah had been up to all these years, that she didn't even know that her daughter had her nursing license revoked in multiple states. That January morning, an FBI agent knocked on the door and showed the search warrant to both of them. Officer Brines got the all clear to go inside. When he walked in the door, he saw
boxes and clutter everywhere. A lot of the boxes were just unopened boxes, like they had ordered something from Amazon and retrieved it and just set it in there and never opened it. They had at least 4 small dogs. What I remember most was the smell, an overwhelming stench of pet urine.
He went into the kitchen.
The counters were just, it was just filled with clutter and junk, old food. I mean, you couldn't really see the kitchen table because it was buried under the stuff. Just seemed like anything that had ever came into that house stayed in that house.
Officers spent the next few hours searching the house for evidence. The triathlon bikes were in the garage. In the basement, Officer Brines found the racing bibs she'd saved from the charity events.
14 items of evidence were collected and seized from the residence. I know at some point during our search, Sarah was taken from the residence up to the Highland Police Department, and she was interviewed.
I tried for months to obtain a tape of this interview. I wanted to hear Sarah telling her own story in her own voice, but the U.S. Justice Department said no. On March 3rd, 2020, Sarah was officially charged with 8 felony counts, including wire fraud and mail fraud. She was also charged with aggravated identity theft from using her mother's credit card to order one of the bikes. The other bike had been donated to her by YSC, the Young Survival Coalition for Women with Breast Cancer. Prosecutors said she had fraudulently received financial aid from Camp Summit. I found out about the charges from a phone call.
Hi, Laura. It's Liz calling. Wow. Okay. So just heard that Sarah was indicted. I'm just shaking. I'm just waiting to hear from Bethany. She's in the meeting, but I just cannot wait to share this with her. It's been just about a year to the day that she was living at our house with my parents, and we discovered this, and I'm without words.
A year earlier, Liz had wanted to help Sarah, feeling an overwhelming sympathy for a dying young woman. Now, Liz was in a very different place.
You know, after 20 years, this woman who has defrauded countless hundreds of people, her own family, to see it come to an end of justice is just such a good feeling.
3 months later, Luke Weisler, the federal prosecutor, arrived early in a brightly lit East St. Louis courtroom. A short time later, Sarah entered with her attorney.
She was in a mask like all of us. I think that she had her hair pulled back. I mean, she was dressed for court, so in a pretty conservative way.
The judge came in and spoke to her.
She is advised of different rights. She is also advised of the charges against her.
She responded that she was aware of the charges.
I think that she was soft-spoken and her voice was a little bit shaky, which, you know, kind of made it seem like she might be nervous or just kind of the gravity of what was happening might be sinking in.
The public couldn't be there because of COVID, but could listen in on a phone line. Liz and Bethany dialed in. When it was over, I gave them a call and asked them what they were doing while all this was going on. Bethany listened at home.
I was sitting here on my couch with my eyes closed, trying to imagine her facial expressions.
She didn't feel any sense of finality. She thought Sarah would just revel in the attention.
She thinks she's going to show up at this courthouse today. She's going to get her 15 minutes of fame again, and she's already on to the next thing. In the beginning, when they're talking about, you know, have you been under psychic evaluation? Are you on drugs? I'm just waiting for that Sarah moment where she just slips away again. She's going to say something. She's going to manipulate this to benefit her. And then at the very end, so I was just hearing this monotone voice. Did you notice when he said, we'll need to confiscate your passport? She said, okay, as she was exhaling. And I thought that was really weird, interesting.
I did pick up on that, Bethany.
That's what I was thinking was, she's already coached this in her head that all she's going to say is, yes, I do. Yes, I do. Yes, I do. Because she's trying so hard to stay in that, whatever that personality, that mindset or whatever it is. I would have loved to see her face to face just for her to know that me and Liz aren't giving this up.
I asked how they would feel if the case settles and there's no trial. Bethany thinks for a second and then isn't even sure she wants Sarah to go in front of a jury.
It doesn't get to be told by her sitting on a stand and crying and trying to win people over. So honestly, at this moment, I don't even know that I would care.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut, and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV true crime podcast, To Live and Die in L.A. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turned sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like a million bucks.
...with zero qualifications...
She had a Harvard plaque.
...tricks her way past a wall of lawyers and agents.
She's got all of these Maseratis and Bentleys all in the driveway.
Is it like a mansion?
Yes, it's a mansion that this queen of the con uses to scam some of the biggest names in professional sports out of untold fortunes.
About $6 million.
Approximately $11 million.
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
Employing whatever means necessary to bleed her victims dry.
She would probably have sex with one of her clients.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
A few months later, Sarah was back at the federal courthouse.
She entered her plea, her guilty plea, on October 13th, 2020. She pled guilty to 4 counts of wire fraud and 1 count of mail fraud.
Sarah appeared in court for the last time on January 19th, 2021. The nation was deeply mired in the pandemic, so everyone participated virtually on a checkerboard of screens that we've all gotten used to.
She was at a table, just kind of a standard conference table, and she was a little bit further back from the screen.
Luke Weisler worked out a deal with Sarah's attorney. He asked for a reduced sentence in exchange for a guilty plea on 5 of the 8 charges.
This is a case where, on paper, the dollars at stake are very minimal.
So minimal, in fact, that in another situation, everyone might have settled for probation. But this was hardly an ordinary case.
From our perspective, some amount of prison time was important.
The judge asked the victims to read their statements.
I wanted the judge to know that, you know, these are organizations that are in the world to do such good, and that the defendant in this case violated almost every aspect of them.
Bethany went first. In a halting voice, she said she wanted to represent the disability community, sacred communities like Camp Summit. I wasn't allowed to tape the statement as she read it in court, but asked her to read what she had written later that day over the phone. She started by talking about Sarah at Camp Summit when Bethany was a counselor.
The Sarah that I knew at camp was very kind. She was thoughtful, giggly, friendly, and intelligent. Sarah told me that she had zero mobility. The typical wheelchair transfer or assistance only requires 1, maybe 2 caregivers. Sarah was unique in that she was difficult to lift because of her stature and her lack of movement. It took 3 of us for the transfers.
She told the court how their friendship blossomed after camp was over.
At one point, Sarah told me she'd consider moving in with me so we could be roommates and she could help me with the child and vice versa, I could help her. For a moment, I truly considered it. I considered her a very good friend at the time, and I thought she understood that life isn't perfect.
And the day she learned the truth.
She got up out of the wheelchair and walked away into a van, never to be seen again. The grief that I felt in that moment, and the grief that we as victims continue to feel, is as if someone's died. It feels as though we're watching a car crash. We know it's about to happen, but we can't stop it. We also know that we have to stick around and pick up Sarah's pieces again.
Bethany asked the judge if she could read a statement written by Aaron Johnson, who wasn't in court that day.
My parents cared for her, for Sarah, as a disabled person more than once. The second time that it happened, she was supposedly paralyzed from a cancerous tumor in her spine. Now that I realize almost 11 years later, there was so much that was fake. She was full of fake diseases, births, deaths, friendships, family members who weren't real. When I first found out that none of this
was real, I questioned everyone in my life. I was devastated. Someone who was supposed to be my best friend had taken my life, wasted my time, and made me feel so dumb for 11, almost 12 years.
She wrote about her lingering pain.
I feel pain for those who gave time and money to give Sarah things she didn't need, making their struggle seem easy as if they did not matter.
Bethany ended by telling the judge that even with all that Aaron had been through, Aaron was still everything that Sarah was not.
Every time that I've approached her with my pain, she's welcomed it with open arms and absorbed it with unconditional love. We're asking today that these communities find justice so that people like me can go back out into the world and love people back the same way that Aaron does.
Then it was Liz's turn. Here she is recounting her statement to me later that day.
Sarah, you are here today facing sentencing to pay for stealing a bike, a helmet, and camps reserved for adults with real disabilities and illnesses. While these are heinous acts that fall under the current definition of a crime, the irreparable pain and immeasurable damage you have caused is so much more.
With Liz and Bethany finished, Luke Weisler asked the judge for a punishment of 8 months in prison. Sarah's defense attorney told the court that his client regretted what she had done and that admitting to it on television meant that there were YouTube links and news stories that would follow her for the rest of her life. He mentioned mitigating factors in her childhood. He didn't specify what they were, though. Finally came Sarah's turn. She started by apologizing for all she'd done. She said she'd changed, telling the judge, "I no longer need to seek unhealthy behaviors to seek the approval of others. I could only listen on a dial-in line, but all the participants of the hearing were on Zoom, watching Sarah's face."
The victims who were on the screen were still emotional. They were emotional throughout really the whole hearing.
As Sarah spoke,
there didn't seem to be a lot of emotion behind her words. And so, especially after the victims had spoken and had so much emotion in what they were saying, you know, there was just a very clear difference in what was being said, or at least how it was being said. And they were just shaking their head, kind of almost denying the sincerity of what was being said as it was being said. They just weren't buying it.
The court went into recess so the judge could consider all she'd heard. Everyone waited. When court resumed, Judge Stacey Yandel started by acknowledging the unusualness of the case and how the damage Sarah inflicted on the hearts and souls of those who befriended her was not technically a matter for a court of law.
It didn't take long in listening to what the judge was saying to see that she really did recognize the emotional impact.
She pointed out that the goal of sentencing is not just punishment, but deterrence. In a time when the internet makes it easy for people to prey on the generosity of others, just like Sarah did. The judge pointed out that Sarah had been scamming people for a long, long time, back to 2006. There was documentation of it. I think she meant the quilt. I couldn't record the judge because of federal rules, but here's another journalist reading from the court transcript.
Ms. DeLashmit began her fraudulent spree many, many years ago, and she has yet to be deterred. As the government pointed out in its sentencing memorandum, this defendant has gone from one fraudulent charade to the next for years. The loss of her Illinois nursing license in 2014 for faking pregnancies and miscarriages did not deter her from pretending to have muscular dystrophy at Camp Summit in 2015 and 2016. And being confronted by her pastor and family and having to rise up from her wheelchair and walk out of Camp Summit in 2016 did not deter her from attending YSC events as a breast cancer survivor in 2017 and 2018. So the question is, what will deter her? I listened closely, Ms. DeLashmit, to your statement, and I paid attention, and I'm frankly not persuaded that there is genuine remorse here or that there is genuine shame.
Judge Yandel acknowledged that Sarah's behavior could be the result of untreated mental illness, but said,
I will point out that this court has been presented with no evidence of that. I have no records. There has been no diagnosis.
Finally, the judge pointed out the limits of the law in this case and said that standard sentencing guidelines
just don't capture or reflect the nature or the range of Ms. DeLashmit's conduct or her crime or the impact of her crimes on the victims.
And with that, Judge Stacey Yandel more than doubled the sentence the prosecution had requested.
And so where is she today?
She is in prison.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in L.A. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like a million bucks.
...with zero qualifications...
She had a Harvard plaque.
...tricks her way past a wall of lawyers and agents.
She's got all of these Maseratis and Bentleys all in the driveway.
Is it like a mansion?
Yes, it's a mansion. ...that this queen of the con uses to scam some of the biggest names in professional sports out of untold fortunes.
about $6 million.
Approximately $11 million.
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
Employing whatever means necessary to bleed her victims dry.
She would probably have sex with one of her clients.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
Is he breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
When the judge handed down Sarah's prison sentence, citing her history going back to the time of the quilt, Andrea Smith, who was listening in, was elated.
It was absolute vindication. It felt like she was getting sentenced for what she did to us, even though we were unable to press charges at the time.
Andrea had been chasing Sarah across the internet for years, hoping to warn her next potential mark. So as we sat at her computer in South Carolina, I wanted to know, now what?
Do you think she'll stop when she gets out?
No, I don't. I don't think that she will stop. I think this is a compulsion. I think that she is mentally ill. I'm not a psychiatric professional, but there's something missing from her life. I don't know. I'm not well-versed enough, but there's something wrong that she needs to seek satisfaction through feigning illness.
Sarah never answered any letters I wrote to her in prison, but in a text message, Sarah's aunt told me that she's doing well. She wrote that Sarah started attending a Bible study group, and one of the inmates is teaching her to crochet. Sarah's mom is having a hard time with her being gone. We're just praying that she can get through this. Sarah will be fine. Her aunt wrapped up the message by texting, "In ending, I just want to say we all miss her and pray for peace for the people who made it their life's purpose to punish her." Sarah's prison sentence was supposed to end in July, but she got out early, on March 4th, something that Luke Weisler says isn't all that unusual for federal sentences. In late January, only weeks before her full release, she changed her Facebook profile picture. In the photo, her brunette hair has blonde highlights. She's holding a chocolate chip cookie and smiling. Wherever Sarah went, she left people shaken. Sympathy was both her great need and her powerful weapon. The victims I talked to are still not the same. This is a story where justice was served, but a tidy ending is not possible.
Do you feel like you have been able to have the closure that you need?
In a way, yes, but in a way, no.
This is Erin again.
I kind of feel closure in a way, but I don't, because I don't feel like she's really being punished for what she did to so many other people, because there are people that she took money and equipment from, and then there's people like me and Bethany and so many other people who she didn't really take money from, but mess with our hearts and our emotions, our families, and everything that money can't buy.
And I'm still left thinking about the question her dad asked me. If you didn't know Sarah, if you were never caught in her net, why does any of this matter?
To be honest with you, I've heard that question myself. I've even had people come to me and say, why are you putting this much energy towards something that was so traumatic?
For Bethany, the answer comes back to something that Dr. Phil said, that Sarah was able to do what she did because she had no empathy.
Empathy is at the core of why all of this matters, because it's at the core of humanity.
For the world to function, we must be able to see ourselves in others. Without that, we can't comprehend their pain, their motivation, the drivers behind the decisions they make every day. Sarah was able to wall herself off from the damage she was causing people like Bethany or Aaron or Liz or anyone she conned. Either Sarah, in her mind, couldn't comprehend how she was hurting them, or she did comprehend it and just didn't care. And here's the reason Bethany and other people Sarah knew wanted to tell this story. They look around and see plenty of people who destroy the trust and spirit of those around them. Too many people who are either passively or willfully numb to the suffering of others.
I can open up any of my social medias right now and pull up videos of adults screaming and fighting. Like, how am I supposed to teach my child we're supposed to be kind when those are the things that she's going to experience? And that's, it's deep. It's troubling.
Every day, we see people hide behind online personas to demean other people. We see people dismissing the basic humanness of others because they have a different set of problems than we do. Maybe they assure themselves that their actions can't be cruel because they're not cruel people. Psychologists have called it America's crisis of empathy, and the societal fractures caused by the pandemic have only made things worse. Bethany knows how destructive that can be.
I know what it feels like to feel degraded. I know what it feels like to feel worthless.
Sarah's behavior was an outlier, but when Bethany distills her actions down to their core, she sees a lack of empathy from other kinds of Sarahs that leave hidden wounds everywhere.
The reason why this story is so important for me to get out there is, what are we all doing with our trauma? You know, Sarah can go to prison. Someone can lock her up for a crime, but where is the law? She was technically locked up because she stole goods and services from these organizations. But the law doesn't account for the trauma.
And there's one other question. How do you have empathy for someone who has none for you? How do we have empathy for someone like Sarah? She left others broken because she was broken herself. And in that case, I don't know what justice really looks like. I can understand that she needed to be punished for the hurt she caused, but she needs more than that. Dr. Phil told her that people who don't have empathy can't fake it. Maybe one day, with help, she'll find it. Maybe the rest of us will too. Sympathy Pains is a production of Neon Hum Media and iHeartRadio. I'm your host, Laura Beal. I wrote and reported the episodes. Natalie Rinn is lead producer. Our editor is Catherine St. Louis. Associate producer is Rufaro Mazarura. Our executive producer is Jonathan Hirsch. Samantha Allison is our production manager. Fact checker is Jacqueline Coletti. Jesse Perlstein composed the theme song and music heard throughout the series. Additional tracks are by Blue Dot Sessions and Epidemic Sound. Scott Somerville is our engineer and sound designer. Reporting consultants are Liz Hickox and Bethany Turner. Special thanks to Stephanie Serrano, Renee Michael Pruitt, and Aaron Brown. From iHeartRadio, special thanks to Carrie Lieberman and Beth Ann Macaluso. Executive producer at iHeartRadio is Dylan Fagan. If you or someone you know is struggling with mental illness, you can call the National Alliance on Mental Illness at 800-950-6264. That's 800-950-NAMI. If you like our podcast, we'd love for you to leave a review. It helps people find our show. And thank you for listening.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, the Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Are coming back to Atlanta right now. Whoa. Mark your calendars, because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th, hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in LA, and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.